Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with a Professor, and we get to go into obviously one of my favorite topics, the salary cap, salaries, and all those different things. And nobody better than Joel Corey from CBSSports.com. And Joel, I guess the big topic in this town, which is going to be building, and I know we've talked about it a little bit last week, is that Russell Wilson is entering the next to last year of his contract. His agent, or at least his representatives, have started to give the indication, oh, maybe it's the right thing to do to go with the franchise tag type negotiations, very much like Kirk Cousins. And if that's the case, kind of give us a big overview of what you think might happen with Russell Wilson and his negotiations in a year or so with Seattle.
Well, you've got two guys who've kind of changed how the franchise tag is viewed in addition to Cousins. Also, Trumaine Johnson going year to year and then getting great deals when a franchise tag is no longer feasible. The first problem for Seattle is last year when they went all in, they did something they never do. Uncharacteristically, they restructured his contract for cap room. And what that did was that increased his cap numbers for 2018 and 19, which makes his franchise tag number even bigger because you're going basically off the last year cap number, a 20% increase of that. So Russell's looking at it, or his representatives, okay, I'm like at 30.3 if I go for franchise tag. You do that again, you're getting close to 36.5. And you wouldn't do a third franchise tag, just be way too cost prohibitive. So if you're looking at that dynamic where you could make $65-66 million over 2 years, and then you're going to be free in your early 30s, which is still prime as a quarterback, that's something to seriously consider. So that's going to be up to Seattle to put an offer on the table, which will get him out of that mindset.
And so, of course, obviously there's going to be we got the first $30 million contract in Matt Ryan. I think everybody presumes that within a short period of time, Aaron Rodgers is going to get a deal. And I know the first number that you kind of speculated on was like about 31.75. Has that increased now that you've started to look closely at the Matt Ryan contract? I know you've been going kind of like on the 6% increase that he had over Matt before and kind of getting this one.
Actually, that's my article this week for CBS. That I've projected Aaron Rodgers' contract and some of the considerations which would go into it. I actually looked at the historical relationship between the highest paid quarterback and the second highest paid at the end of each year, and it's roughly about a 5% difference. But I applied the conventional dynamic of what Rodgers and Ryan's were last time when they were 1-2. When they did deals in 2013. So I pegged it at $32 million. So 5-year extension last time, another 5-year extension. So that's $160 million of new money over 5 years. The real question is going to be, will he advance the ball in terms of guarantees? And the reason I say that is Green Bay is kind of like Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, that they don't do guarantees like other teams do. The only guy on Green Bay that has any type of salary guarantee outside of signing bonus is Aaron Rodgers. They made an exception for him last time. He didn't set the record for guaranteed money, overall guarantees last time, or fully guaranteed at signing. So I expect that to hold true, and he's going to fall short of Matt Ryan's $94.5 million fully guaranteed at signing and $100 million overall guarantees, but he'll be the highest paid player by average yearly salary and have better cash flow than anyone else. That's kind of what I think is going to happen. And this deal will most likely be done at the latest, the start of training camp in late July, early August.
So then, you know, with Russell Wilson, if he would do the franchise tags in 2020 and 2021, then that would be the 30 and 36. Would you project that Russell may get more money on a long-term deal than Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, last time they put him right under Aaron Rodgers. The weird thing was Rodgers became the ceiling for everybody for about 3 years when he signed his deal, that you didn't have anyone surpass it until, at least on an average basis, until the Ravens had to redo Joe Flacco's deal because his cap number was so out of whack and they needed the cap room. And then, yet, Andrew Luck couple months later, surpass them. I think this time, because of the franchise tag dynamic, which didn't exist last time, and also Russell Wilson had not made any real NFL money as a third-round pick, now that he's had one big veteran contract, he could afford to play hardball a little more. So I think they're going to have to go above Aaron Rodgers in order to get any type of deal done with Russell Wilson on a long-term basis.
But then also, just going to your original point with the Kirk Cousins situation and the fact that Russell would be so young at the end of a couple years, would it be in his best interest and Mark Rogers, his agent's best interest, to just play it out like that, obviously causing a lot of problems for the team because the cap number is going to be so high. But where would that fall in his strategy as opposed to taking a long-term deal in excess of Aaron Rodgers?
Well, the thing is, the agent's going to evaluate There always is a number. There is a number for Cousins. The Redskins just botched how they approached that. But Mark Rogers and Russell Wilson will have a number in mind. Here's what it's going to take to get me to forego the year-to-year process like Kirk Cousins. And I suspect to buy out that whole process, you're going to have to put that number way out there. Because they know that they wouldn't franchise him a third time because you're over $50 million for the third franchise tag. So it'd really just be 2 years. You go year to year, make $65, $66 million, and then you put pressure on Seattle to make him the highest paid player at that point, or they can project it out early. There's a number that'll get it done, but it's going to be a number which Seattle is going to have a hard time swallowing.
Yeah, one thing that I noticed even on the Le'Veon Bell situation, because again, we're seeing a few more players, not that many are going to get franchise tag, you usually only get five or six a year, but if you do that, it's funny because if you can get a big deal, not maybe in the case of Le'Veon, but in the case of a quarterback, you can do the franchise tag and ultimately get the big deal, but you're also losing money a little bit during that time. For example, you look at the $46.5 million signing bonus that Matt Ryan was able to receive along with his base salary. I mean, you can make over $50 million that first year as opposed to, the $66 that you can make over two. And with the dynamics of a big signing bonus, sometimes you can lose money. I know in the case of Le'Veon Bell, even though he was franchised twice in 12 and 14, the offer that the Steelers made to him actually was more than what he made over those 2 years.
Well, Bell's not the right case because the running back market has declined so much that his franchise tag doesn't have any real relation to where the actual market is. But you're not losing as much money as you might think because signing bonuses are deferred. Well, we'll take Matt Ryan's, for instance. It's a $46.5 million signing bonus. But he's not getting 23.5 of it until next April. So in the 2018 calendar year, he's making $29.25 million. So given that most signing bonuses are deferred, the trade-off isn't as dramatic because that money will be coming in the next calendar year. Now, with Green Bay, they pay their signing bonuses all in that calendar year when the deal's done. Last time when Aaron Rodgers got a $35 million signing bonus, he had it all by the end of the regular season. So if they give him a record signing bonus this time, which I think they'll have to do, top Matthew Stafford's $50 million signing bonus, say 52.5 or 55, he'll get that all this year. So that is something Green Bay does that's unique. But when Tom Brady had a $30 million signing bonus in a restructure a few years ago in 2013, he didn't get the last installment of like $5 million until 2015. Did the deal in 13, got the last payment in 15.
Now, the one problem that is created if you do the franchise route is how much cap room it eats up and how it limits what the team's going to be able to do, but what you're going to be able to do is being surrounded with the players. Like, where do you go with the 15% cap of the cap can go to one player, which would be the quarterback, maybe at the max 18%, but what number and what percentage starts to choke a team and for a player trying to get good players around him?
Outside of Tom Brady, and he's unique for a variety of reasons, agents don't really care about the team's cap problems for the most part. That's up for the team's cap manager, and Seattle has a really good one. Matt Thomas, who I dealt with when I was an agent in Miami. Agents are like, you give my player his money. I don't care about the cap in the abstract as long as I get a more player-friendly contract So I have security, and you worry about that. But you're right. Typically, you don't go really above 15, 18% of the cap as a quarterback. You haven't really seen a quarterback eating up a huge percentage of the cap win a Super Bowl. It would have been Matt Ryan had Atlanta held on and not let New England come back. But your best bet for building a team is kind of like Seattle the first time around. When you had Russell Wilson on a low rookie contract, that's what Philadelphia did. Carson Wentz, he's a bargain, not like Wilson, but that allowed them to have a high-priced backup quarterback. But as you see some of the better quarterbacks have these huge cap numbers, because it's not always the best quarterback is the highest paid, because I don't think anyone's ever going to confuse Joe Flacco with elite. Then ultimately somebody with an extremely high cap number taking up a huge percentage is going to win a Super Bowl, probably in the next 3 to 5 years.
Say hello to Keel Mortgage. Visit keelmortgage.com or call 888-778-KIEL. And you're on your way to a home loan that'll make you smile. Keel Mortgage, your home lending partner for life. CL 53969.
Thanks for downloading My Schooled podcast. And now that spring is here, that means it's time to go through all your unwanted valuables and turn them into useful cash at Bellevue Rare Coins. Set an appointment at BellevueRareCoins.com or just walk into one of the four locations in Bellevue, Linwood, West Seattle, and Issaquah today. One problem, of course, I guess, to do all this is, you know, you're the leader of your team, you're the quarterback, and you get the feeling, like in the case of Kirk Cousins, there was some resentment for him going through, because I know some of its teammates and certainly management was going, but of course, from the financial standpoint, it was brilliant, because the offers made by the Redskins were roughly $4 million less in a couple times than what he was going to be making as a franchise player, which if you're going to be smart, why would I do that?
Yeah, I think you could look at that whole Redskins Kirk Cousins thing as a blueprint for how not to sign what should be your long-term quarterback. Because I think the Redskins did everything wrong at every instance. They never gave Kirk Cousins anything to seriously think about or make a real decision, because the offers always led him to, well, I'm playing the franchise tag. And Matt Ryan and Tom Condon, that's Matt Ryan's agent, oh, Mike McCartney, who represents Kirk Cousins, a huge debt of gratitude for playing the whole situation the way he did and really increasing the amount of money fully guaranteed at signing. It went from 60.5 with Matthew Stafford to 84. And if you don't have that huge jump with Cousins, Matt Ryan's not sitting there at 94.5 fully guaranteed at signing. Maybe he's at 70, 75, but the way that he got that much fully guaranteed at signing is directly attributed to what Mike McCartney did with Kirk Cousins.
So now, if you're Seattle, how do you handle it? When do you start negotiating, and what kind of offer do you try to make? And obviously, this would have to be after an Aaron Rodgers deal is done, and let's assume, like you were projecting, it'll be $32 million. What's the strategy for Seattle?
Well, I think they've already gotten behind the eight ball, because what I would have done, I would have kind of changed my philosophy, knowing where the quarterback market was going to head after Jimmy Garoppolo did his deal for a guy who's barely played. I would have tried to make a preemptive strike and get Russell out of the way before free agency started, before the Cousins deal. Obviously, that can't happen. So I don't think they're really going to do anything until this time next year, after the 2018 season, going into his contract year. I think that's when there'll be negotiations in earnest. And there's another wild card you gotta factor in the equation. Philadelphia, they do deals really early with Lane Johnson, their first-round pick a few years ago. They did that deal before they even had to exercise the option. It's after 3 years, first time you do a deal for a draft pick. If Carson Wentz comes back and is anything close to what he was before he tore up his knee, they're going to try to get that deal done really early. So you'll have that out there, and Russell Wilson will have enough ammunition to go, I should make more than Carson Wentz. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if they made Carson Wentz the highest paid player in the league over Aaron Rodgers, and then you got another additional layer in the equation as well. So I think they probably should have tried to negotiate already, but you may have two other deals, Rodgers for sure and Wentz out there as well, that they'll have to contend with in the Russell Wilson negotiations.
Mm-hmm. I guess, and there's always that crazy thought, because again, it's hard to win without a quarterback. Does it become too much if it's going to be over $32 million that you have to consider maybe trading a Russell Wilson in his prime?
Well, if the cap keeps going up anywhere from 6 to 8% per year like it has been, then $32 million doesn't seem all that exorbitant compared to the growth in the cap, because right now we're 177.2. We could be pushing 190 next year, over 200, somewhere between 200 and 205 million in 2020. So if you put it in that context, maybe 32 million per year isn't as outrageous as it sounds right now.
Very interesting. So the challenge is going to be trying to see if they can get something done. Now, with these salaries going up overall, with now guards making, 13, 14, and tackles making 15, and we're close to the first $20 million player in Aaron Donald or Khalil Mack, what problems does that cause for teams as far as being able to keep teams together?
Well, one thing I think you may see is the way the quarterback market has escalated and the top of the non-quarterback market has kind of remained stagnant. I don't know if it's going to be Aaron Donald or Khalil Mack, but one of those two guys is probably going to push for a deal, which is not only at $20 million, but probably closer to $25 than $20. That may be why they end up playing out their fifth-year option, because the agent's going to contend that these salaries haven't kept pace with how the quarterback salaries have escalated, and that needs to be corrected in the marketplace. But you see a Nate Solder, who's a good tackle, not a great tackle, resetting that position. You're going to see some young guys coming up like this year, Taylor Lewan, who's better. He's going to probably take that marketplace $17, $18 million. And then even a guy like DeMarcus Lawrence on a franchise tag who's embracing it in Dallas, that's an $18 million franchise tag, knowing that Jadeveon Clowney should get a strong deal. And one of the two non-quarterbacks I mentioned, Mack and Donald, that number is going to be out there as well. But the goal is to keep your good players. So you got to pay the going rate for good players. Atlanta's a team which you can look at, which is going to have a problem. Now they've got Ryan on his new, bigger contract than before. And they got a bunch of young defensive players on rookie contracts. It's going to be like Bobby Wagner said a few years ago, you can't keep everyone. They're going to go through that same thing, have to be judicious in who they pick, a Deion Jones, a Vic Beasley, a Grady Jarrett, and so forth. Because you can only pay so many people in a salary cap system which doesn't have exceptions like the NBA salary cap.
Also, the challenge, I guess, of trying to do all these things is coming together at the right time. And one thing I'm finding, it's like it's getting harder and the slower pace for getting these big deals done. And I go to the fifth-year guys that have gotten the extensions for the 5 years, because a lot of those guys either get traded the year before that, but more of them get traded a year before because they figure it's not going to be worth the money. And it is hard to get these fifth-year first-round picks signed to long-term deals.
Yeah, you had last year, none of the guys, 2014 first-round draft class, none of those guys signed deals after their third year. The previous couple years, you'd have two, three, maybe four guys do that. But that was kind of eye-opening last year, and you had a better caliber of player. You had the Odell Beckham Juniors, the Khalil Macks, the Zach Martins, the Aaron Donalds, the Jadeveon Clowneys. Mike Evans. Mike Evans is like the only one who's gotten a deal so far, and he got that right after the season. So I think it would be wise for the NFLPA in the next round of labor negotiations to either push for the elimination of the fifth-year option, and they'd have to give up a huge concession for that, or a reconfiguration of that fifth-year salary. Maybe it's the franchise and transition numbers as opposed to transition and third through 25th highest paid salaries. Depending upon where you go in the round, because what used to drive salaries under the old rookie system was you'd have these, because of the escalators and incentives that would hit, you'd have these big cap numbers in the last couple of years, which would give the top picks at the draft huge leverage. That's how Calvin Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald got those deals. And that would in turn drive the rest of the market and lift everything up. You're not really seeing that type of dynamic anymore with the fifth-year option.
It's going to be a lot of things being negotiated here, but a lot of things that I know I have fun with, and you do such a great job of covering it. Read them on CBSSports.com. Joel Corey. Hey, Joel, thanks for joining us on Schooled with the Professor.
Sure. Thanks for having me, John.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with the Professor.